It's 6 o'clock, and you're listening to KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. Welcome to KDNK's weekly newsreel.
A news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by RJ Paddywhack's Pet Outfitters, next to City Market in Elgebel. Open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywhacks.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host.
High Country News reported last week that low oil prices have caused a record decline in U.S. oil and gas rig counts. Some companies have gone bankrupt. Others have laid off workers and scaled back operations. The Bureau of Land Management has held lease sales across the West and allowed energy companies to apply for lease suspensions and avoid royalty payments. But, reports Reuters, renewable energy projects on BLM lands were hit with retroactive rent bills in mid-May. Pitkin County had the highest unemployment rate in the state in April, according to State Labor Department statistics released Friday. The Aspen Daily News reports that the county's 23.1% jobless rate was slightly higher than tourist-dependent Gilpin County. Garfield County's unemployment rate was 13.4%, and Mesa County was listed at 12.6%. The state unemployment rate increased from 5.2% in March to 11.3% in April.
The city of Glenwood Springs will reopen public buildings to employees on June 1st, including the community center, city hall, and the police department and fire department administrative offices, and the art center. Virtual city hall will continue with many employees continuing to work remotely. The public can access city buildings by a prearranged appointment only. Appointments should be made a minimum of 48 hours in advance. The community center and recreation programs remain closed to the public.
The Colorado Air Quality Control Commission Friday adopted a regulation to help curb the state's greenhouse gas emissions. Colorado Public Radio reports that Regulation 22 will help identify pollution locations and amounts to track progress on the state's climate goals. The rule will phase out the use of hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, a greenhouse gas used in air conditioning and refrigeration systems. Well, despite 100,000 deaths in the U.S., Governor Jared Polis said Tuesday that under statewide restrictions over the last 2 months, the exponential growth of COVID-19 in Colorado had leveled out. Colorado Public Radio reports that according to the governor, there are now about 24,500 confirmed cases in Colorado and under 400 people hospitalized. Earlier in the state, each person was passing the disease to 3 or 4 people. Now it's spreading at a rate of about 1 person.
The White River National Forest seeks public comment on the Whitney Creek geotechnical investigation. The proposal is for geophysical and subsurface surveys in the Homestake Valley, about 10 miles south of Minturn. The area could become the site of a new reservoir. The cities of Aurora and Colorado Springs want to drill 10 bore samples up to 150 feet deep. Crews would also collect geophysical data. The cities hold water rights in the Upper Eagle River Basin and are parties to a 1998 agreement to develop a joint water use project in the basin. Comments can be submitted online at fs.usda.gov. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission will not revisit its recent approval of the Jordan Cove Liquefied Natural Gas Terminal and Pacific Connector Pipeline in Oregon. CourthouseNews.com reports that FERC denied requests from tribes, environmentalists, and landowners to look at species loss and other concerns. Estimates show that the project would spew 2 million tons of carbon emissions annually and derail Oregon's ability to meet greenhouse gas reduction goals. Pipeline construction can't begin until state permits are approved, but the U.S. Commerce Secretary could override a state review. FERC also said that it would consider waiving the requirement for a state permit under the Clean Water Act. Summer event cancellations due to COVID-19 just keep on coming, including Aspen's annual 4th of July parade and fireworks show and other events around town, reports the Aspen Times. The 99th annual Greeley Stampede has also been canceled for the July 4th weekend. And Cheyenne Frontier Day has been canceled for the first time in its 124-year history. The Denver Post reports that Frontier Day, billed as the world's largest rodeo, is held each year during the last 2 weeks of July. It brings as many as 140,000 people to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and generates about $28 million for the local economy.
This week's stories focused on a sort of what happened response to the COVID-19 shutdowns, public health orders, government stimulus efforts, as well as non-COVID stories about Mustangs and goats, which you'll hear later in the podcast. First, though, soon after COVID-19 shut down schools, local school districts started delivering regular meals from Aspen to Parachute. But the shutdown meant many students also lost access to storybooks, provided every week by local nonprofit Raising a Reader. The organization adapted and began including books with Roaring Fork School District's free meals program. KDNK's Lucas Turner spoke with Raising a Reader Executive Director Cindy Blatchley to learn more.
Our mission is to keep families reading together and so that children are excited about books, excited about reading, and ready to enter kindergarten, ready to read and learn. And so we serve 1,300 families from Aspen to Parachute. We have multiple programs, but our most well-known is the Red Book Bag program, where we get books rotating in and out of homes through preschools and kindergarten classrooms. And so in the classroom, there are red book bags, and each bag has four books in it. And these are very high-quality, beautiful storybooks. And so each week, children bring home one bag, and they read the books for the week, and then they bring that bag home. And the next week, they bring home four new books. So over the course of the year, they have exposure to over 100 different storybooks. And then we also provide parents with information about why it's important to read to young children, how it helps develop their brain during that really crucial time between birth and age 5 to lay the foundation for solid literacy skills, vocabulary, and helping them be ready to learn and have academic success when they get to school.
There's a new initiative with the local school districts. Can you tell me about what's happening there?
Yeah, so because the schools needed to close to in-person learning due to the coronavirus, our red book bag rotation was kind of cut short this school year. So we wanted to make sure that families still had the resources that they needed to keep reading with their children, you know, especially now when the routine of reading can bring a lot of comfort to children and their parents, you know, having that time that you set aside to read together every day is just a really nice way for things to still feel normal when some families' lives have really been upended. So we had pulled about 400, 500 books out of our book bag rotation over the years, and we had bins in our storage area of these books, and it just seemed like a great opportunity to get these books into the hands of families. And we realized probably one of the best logistically the ways to do that would be to work with the schools through their meal delivery program. And so I have contacted RE1, RE2, as well as Garfield 16, and RE1 and RE2 were really excited about this. And these are books for preschool age children, kindergarten children, and the drivers know the families. So they know the families who will be interested and who may not have books at home, because some of our families have few, if any, age-appropriate storybooks at home for their children. And the only time that they have access to those books is through our Red Book Bag program. So this is a way to kind of fill that need.
Could you just let us know where people can learn more about your program?
To learn more about Raising a Reader, you can visit our website at www.rar4kids.org. And on the homepage of our website, there is a link to our English and Spanish Facebook pages. And that's where we are providing a lot of resources, live virtual story time, all sorts of other story times and activities to help families stay happy and healthy and connected during this time.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for your interest. I appreciate it.
Millions of U.S. citizens were excluded by the CARES Act from receiving a stimulus check due to filing taxes jointly with an immigrant spouse. During a recent virtual press conference organized by the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, restaurant owner Elena Silva gave voice to families affected by this provision. KDNK's Raleigh Burley has more.
On Thursday, May 21st, the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition hosted a virtual press conference to highlight Colorado families facing additional challenges amid this crisis due to immigration status.
How do we align our own daily decisions for our health and economic well-being with compassion for what our neighbors are facing?
Among the speakers, Elena Silva, a Westminster restaurant owner and mother of two young children, gave voice to families excluded from receiving a federal stimulus check due to filing taxes jointly with a non-citizen.
A specific and targeted design, stimulus money was withheld from over 15 million people living in mixed-status families.
A provision in the CARES Act disqualifies mixed-status families from receiving a stimulus check identified by persons using an individual taxpayer identification number, the legal alternative to a Social Security number for immigrants.
This lays bare a grave hypocrisy in our tax system, that we ask of new immigrants to pay into a tax system if they are to ever have hope for citizenship, yet deny them support from the very system that they faithfully paid into.
For mixed-status couples, filing taxes jointly is part of proving the legitimacy of their marriage to eventually gain legal status. Advocates observe that this provision seemingly penalizes immigrants and their families for following the rules by paying federal income and Social Security taxes.
This also violates the civil rights of American citizens like myself, who choose to marry and file taxes jointly with their immigrant spouses.
Even without her husband receiving a stimulus check, the exclusionary provision denies Elena's family $2,700. That's $1,200 for herself and $500 for each of her children.
Families like mine are left without support. I worry about the future for my children, growing up in a mixed-status family with two parents that love them dearly, but a government that deems them worthy of support. And I worry about the millions of others affected by this cruel provision. And I pray that our leaders correct it quickly.
The HEROES Act, passed by Congress on May 15th, seeks to amend this provision and even retroactively distribute stimulus checks to persons previously excluded under the CARES Act. The Senate is expected to debate this legislature, consisting of another $3 trillion in economic aid, later this week. For KDNK News, I'm Raleigh Burley.
The district court case filed by the Garfield County Public Health Department against Shooter's Bar and Grill was dismissed Tuesday. Shooter's owner Lauren Boebert was supposed to appear in court in Glenwood Springs that afternoon, but because of the state's approval of Garfield County's request for a variance to state public health orders and the new statewide order allowing restaurants to partially reopen, the county asked to vacate the hearing. That case was subsequently dismissed. The district court case, however, has no bearing on Boebert's license reinstatement. She lost her license to operate the restaurant on May 15th for a minimum of 30 days. She was served with a cease and desist request on Tuesday afternoon, May 12th, for violating state and county public health orders. She continued to violate the public health orders and the cease and desist order, so Garfield County filed a temporary restraining order on Wednesday, May 13th. 2 days later, the county yanked her license. Yesterday afternoon, after talks with the Garfield County Attorney's Office, Boebert agreed to follow all current and future executive and public health orders that apply to restaurants in Garfield County. And according to a county press release, Boebert's license has been reinstated.
You're listening to the Weekly News Reel, featuring top stories aired between Monday and Friday. In-kind support comes from Grassroots Community Network, promoting civic participation through civil discourse, creative endeavors, and cultural interaction. Grassroots TV also partners with KD&K to air live Pitkin County public health and community meetings. More info at grassrootstv.org.
Horse trainers from across Colorado picked up their wild Mustangs today at the Rio Blanco County Fairgrounds for the start of the second annual Meeker Mustang Makeover. They have 100 days to transform the horses from wild to mild. On Saturday, May 30th, horse trainers from across the state will face the hardest part of the Meeker Mustang Makeover: putting a halter on a wild horse and loading it into a trailer. The event, now in its second year, is the brainchild of local rancher Deirdre McNabb, who says last year's makeover was a huge success.
We got such positive feedback from not just the audience, but the people in the town of Meeker and the county of Rio Blanco where this takes place. And they all wanted to see it happen again. And they thought it was a terrific new event for the town of Meeker, which is surrounded by herds of Mustangs in the Bureau of Land Management area.
This year's event is bigger.
We've almost doubled the numbers of horses.
And includes a new competition.
We've added a youth component this year where we have 5 yearling, which means they're 1-year-old Mustangs, that will go to youth ages 10 to 18. And simply by working with this horse for 100 days and being able to satisfy an obstacle course requirement will get $800 scholarships toward their college or vocational school.
But the Meeker Mustang Makeover is about more than showcasing horse training abilities. One of the most contentious issues facing the Bureau of Land Management's Wild Horse and Burro program is the number of animals in holding facilities around the country. Mustangs and burros rounded up but not adopted end up in off-range corrals or pastures for the rest of their natural lives. Agency estimates as of April 2020 show a little more than 48,000 Mustangs and burros in holding facilities and pastures. Maintenance for those animals eats up most of the program's budget. The agency spent more than $57 million on animals in holding in 2019. In its most recent report to Congress about the Wild Horse and Burro program, BLM states that it wants to remove 18,000 to 20,000 animals permanently every year from public rangelands to be placed in off-range holding until the amount of animals on the range is at an agency-determined management level that takes into consideration other range uses. The whole point of the original BLM adoption program was to adopt out as many horses that were taken off the range. But since the 1980s, annual adoption rates have not kept up with the amount of horses and burros rounded up. So the animals that aren't adopted go right into holding. That's where the makeover programs come in. Since 2007, the Mustang Heritage Foundation, affiliated with the BLM, has been hosting Mustang makeovers across the country, which attract national trainers. But the Meeker Makeover is a separate local event. Deirdre McNabb says it's sponsored by local businesses and groups, and it's an economic driver for the community. It's also good for the horses.
This is a process of not just finding productive homes and forever homes for these horses, but it's an opportunity to educate the audience about the iconic American Mustang.
My name's Melissa Kindle. I work at the BLM in Meeker, Colorado. I am the range tech wild horse management person at our office.
Even though the BLM is not affiliated with the Meeker Makeover, Kindle's in charge of getting Mustangs to the event. She says the horses chosen this year are 50-50 mares and geldings.
7 horses came from Colorado, and they were most likely gathered outside of the Sandoys Basin herd management area. The rest of the horses are from Wyoming. And I'm not sure which HMA. I suspect Adobe Town, but I can't say for sure.
Kindle says her favorite part of the makeover is the kismet of matching horse to trainer.
Even though everything is so random in everybody's life, when the adopters come on Saturday, it's almost like they were destined to be paired with this horse.
This year, in the age of COVID-19, it's kind of like Meeker Mustang makeover or bust. McNabb says even if the virus spikes at the end of the summer, the show will go on.
If we have significant growth in COVID, we would move to an online event.
Trainers have 100 days to prepare their steeds before the makeover finals in early September. And finally, the Bureau of Land Management is trying a different land management method on its recently acquired Schutte Ranch in Carbondale. KDNK's Kathleen Shannon has more.
You ready?
We're ready.
More than 1,100 goats unloaded from two semi-trucks up Cattle Creek Road in Carbondale last week. They were destined to dine on the overgrown pastures of Schutte Ranch. The Bureau of Land Management acquired this 557-acre parcel and its historic water rights as part of a land exchange in 2017. The property had historically been used as a cattle ranch.
The fields had been planted with crested wheat and smooth brome for livestock forage, but when BLM wrote the management plan for the ranch, it was decided to manage it primarily for the benefit of wildlife. But those ag fields that were seeded with a monoculture of one or two grass species do not provide very good wildlife habitat.
That's Carla DeYoung, an ecologist with the BLM, whose research stands behind the Schutte Ranch project. It's unusual for the BLM to work in areas of historic pasture, and it doesn't typically employ domesticated animals. But new challenges present opportunities.
And we've done some literature research on goat grazing and had other people have had great success using them. And so we were excited to give it a try on this particular situation since it seemed ideal to use goats on these irrigated fields.
So what role do goats have in this situation? Well, they're the opposite of grazers.
Goats are browsers, so they prefer brush, trees, cactus, anything pokey, anything poisonous, and everything that nothing else eats.
Lonnie Malmberg is in charge of the herd at Schutte Ranch. She's been operating her business, Goat Green LLC, for 26 years with her son Donnie. Though she has roots in cattle ranching, Lonnie's interest in goats grew from her master's degree in weed science. While many of her fellow graduates wound up working for chemical companies, Lonnie's values brought her to the world of goats.
This is 4,400 hooves, which is tilling, mulching, aerating the soil, breaking up these pedestaled up clumps of this bunch grass that has never been stepped on. So 4,400 hooves coming through. It's 100,000 pounds. It's 100,000 pounds of a living, tilling, grooming machine that is doing all these things at the same time, and they're self-propelled. And with these border collie dogs, we can make the speed of the herd change and the direction change, which you get a whole different tillage action when you do that.
Rob, go away. Right there. Hello.
Because of tight turns on the road, the ranchers and their border collie colleagues had to herd the goats up about a mile of road to enter Schutte Ranch. Lonnie says the herd is accustomed to frequent movement. The goats have worked in all 15 western states.
They've seen it all. They've seen it all. And they're just a fabulous trained herd of goats that has purpose, and they know they're on the job.
The goats are born and die within the herd, and some breeds are better for this type of work than others.
My favorite breed is Cashmere Spanish. It's a type of Spanish goat because I like mine wild, skinny, and very well behaved and hungry. So it's not a meat breed. I mean, people who are in production agriculture have meat goats, and then they raise them and get them fat and sell them for meat. These work their whole lives for me, and everything is based on behavior.
Most of this goat training and good behavior comes from the herd's genetic line.
We have the ancestors and the successors for 26 years. So we have 26 generations of goats, and they have herd memory and gut memory. of every place we've ever been and every poisonous plant that we've ever eaten and every difficult situation, and the memory is passed down through the generations.
The goats will eat what's undesirable at Sudi Ranch, and it's up to the BLM to decide what should replace those plants. Carla and her team selected replacement species that are not only good for wildlife, but also have a chance of surviving in depleted soils.
We seeded the fields prior to bringing the goats out with three forb species, and the goats will help to reduce the cover of grasses, open up some space for the forbs to grow, and their hooves will help incorporate the seed into the soil, and their urine and feces will help fertilize the seed and also help build up the organic matter in the soil. Two of the forbs that we chose are nitrogen fixers, meaning that they will help improve the soil nutrients for other species. And all of the forbs are very palatable for deer and elk, as well as for bees and other pollinators. And birds also like to eat the wildflower seeds that we chose.
When the goats finish their work here, they'll move on to the Lake Christine wildfire area. Lonnie will send a different herd along the Roaring Fork Transit Authority bike path later this summer, as she has the past several years. It's challenging to coordinate all this movement, Lonnie says, but it's worth it.
To me, it's a great adventure. Everything is a great adventure because, like I said, everything I own has four legs or four wheels, and you move all the time. And we meet the greatest people in the world, and we've been on the most beautiful landscapes you could even imagine. And we're right there in a camper right with our herd. And then we move on to the next most beautiful situation that you ever saw.
KDNK News, I'm Kathleen Shannon.
Presents another Soul Theater radio play Sunday at 4 p.m. Tune in to hear The Velveteen Rabbit.
That does it for this week's newsreel on KDNK. All of our stories and more are at kdnk.org. The Weekly Newsreel is a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening and have a great week.